Welcome, dear Gladys, to another Hour in Summer, and tonight a series of remarkable women. I'll introduce you to the Matahari of Indonesia, but first, two women who've done plenty of research on headaches because they constantly suffered with this pain in the head. In fact, on any one day, 200,000 of our fellow citizens experience a migraine. What's more, about half of them will miss work or school or that special event because of this chronic pain in the head. But interestingly enough, there are some who've never experienced a headache in their lives. Genetics, the environment and diet all play a role in causing them. Dr. Carol Hungerford is author of Headache, A Family Doctor's Guide to Treating a Common Ailment, and Paula Kamen is author of All in the Head. And I started by asking Carol the difference between a headache and a migraine.
Well, a migraine is usually classified by a neurologist, and they usually, the characteristics might I say about them is that they include having a headache which is on one side of the head, and very often my patients will virtually pick up a texticolor and say, "I get it there, doctor," and they will almost draw on their face. It's usually on one side. It's often got other things like wanting to vomit with it, being upset by light or even sound sometimes, and wanting to go and lie down. And in the worst case, the person simply can't get off the bed. Migraine can further break down into migraine with aura and migraine without aura. And one neurologist has described any headache that really happens frequently and keeps people away from work is probably a migraine.
Okay, that's one. Carol, the term cluster headache was often thrown at me when I was a sufferer. What's a cluster headache?
The thing that would have picked you out as a cluster headache sufferer would have been that you're male. They're far more common in males. They're about the only headache. It is more common in males. And they are also got the unfortunate nickname of the suicide headache because they're so exquisitely painful. They say it's one of the worst pains a human can endure. And they come in clusters. You might get one every hour for several days or one every day for several weeks and not get them for 6 months and then get them again.
Now, I have great sympathy with Paula, who we now bring into the discussion, because Paula lives with headaches constantly. And Paula, I know what that's like. The World Health Organization has placed migraine among the world's leading causes of disability. Would you tell us your first experience of a migraine?
Yeah, I actually have what's related to migraine. It's another type of headache called chronic daily headache. And that's when you have a headache that's at least 15 days a month and about 4 hours a day. And there's the different studies about how common it is. It sounds extremely freakish, but actually about 4% of the population has that, but only about 0.5 has what I have, where it's nonstop all the time.
Now, Paula, you talk about the importance of acceptance. Your book concentrates on how you learn to live with this problem after you accepted that you couldn't get rid of it.
Yes, it took a lot of years to come to that conclusion that I basically started having this same headache. It came on about 23 years ago, and it's been there ever since. And it probably took me about 15 years of just every kind of drug treatment, every kind of alternative medicine, to finally realize, you know, that it just wasn't a matter of my attitude or reducing stress, or there wasn't going to be a magic pill, you know, that it was something I had to accept. And then, ironically, by accepting it, I was able to have a better quality of life.
Your headaches have changed your relationships, haven't they? Even your relationships with men.
It changes everything. You had to rethink the career. I actually got married after this book was first published in 2006, and my husband was fully aware of it before the first date. He actually read my book, so I didn't have to be in the closet. So he knew what he was getting into, but by that time, I had learned a lot to manage it. I mean, it still makes our life more difficult. There's no denying that. But after so many years with it, you know, I've gotten much better, but I had to reorder everything, my work, all relationships, every possible part of life was affected by it.
Paula, you complain in your book about blokes who were so insensitive, they didn't even notice you had a migraine, that you'd be almost doubled up in pain and they didn't twig.
Yeah, it's actually positive that I don't know how much it affected relationships with men, because I don't think that they even realized just how bad it was. So, and I've always had the fear of it, of complaining too much. So I actually don't talk about it as much as you would think.
Well, I'm going to organize a relationship with John Laws for you. I'm going to. The two of you are made for each other. Now, Carol, your problems, and this is a shocking thing to say, began with your grandmother.
Yes, it's a bit sad, but my grandmother was lovely. She was one of the lovely really lovely people in my life. But she wore perfume and she gave us chocolate. And she sat in the back of the car between my brother and me, no doubt to stop us fighting, I don't know. But she'd slip us chocolate and... she'd slip us chocolate, and that wasn't a good idea in a car for a person who's a migrant, would-be migranteur. But on top of that, she was wearing perfume.
Are you saying that chocolate is one of the better-known triggers?
I definitely am saying it's a trigger. And I think about migraine or headaches generally as bullets, guns. You've got the gun, you put in the bullets, you pull the trigger, or you put a lock on the trigger. It's that simple sometimes.
It's not fair. I mean, chocolate is such a lovely food.
That's beautiful. And if people want to eat it, if you're a diabetic, for goodness sake, go and eat chocolate without sugar in it. It's a wonderful food and it's full of magnesium and very good things. But please don't eat it if you're a migraineur.
Now, some of the other triggers you talk about are sitting under a flickering light, eating oranges, drinking red wine, eating peanuts. What pleasures are left?
Well, there are some, Philip. I won't go into detail here on Earth. It's not a family program at 11 at night, but, you know. But I just wanted to say in response to Paula, my heart just goes out to her because she sounds like any one of my migraine patients, my headache patients generally, but people who have got stress headaches usually know it. They either tumble onto a solution like you did. If it was a stress headache, I suspect it was a migraine or a combination. They're not simple. But Paula, started with wearing a contact lens, and my argument is that headaches all go through what's known as the trigeminal nerve. And that is telling us, is there something wrong with our face, our eyes, our ears, or our teeth, or our gums? They all go into the trigeminal nerve. And in her case...
So it hoovers in information, in a sense, or
it
impulses.
Does in everybody. In everybody. You can feel a little, hair on your forehead. You know, you can... It's so important. What happens in our head and our brains is so important. And sometimes the
message...
I've
always thought the brain was overrated, frankly.
Oh, I would argue that any day, Philip, but it's really an important organ and our body is trying to protect us. And I believe headaches are very often protective, but sometimes the protective aspect shoots overboard.
In your experience, Paula, what have been the triggers for you? Are you a chocolate triggerer?
It's sort of complicated to talk about triggers. That it's helpful to a lot of people because it's all individual. You know, that some person, that might be someone that red wine is a big trigger. Some other person flickering light. But then most headaches actually have no triggers. They found in research, and a problem is that people like me, who don't have the triggers, that it adds to the stigma where people are talk to me like, oh, you aren't eating the right things, you're not controlling your environment well enough. You know, where it's basically something where the neurology of the brain is like overly, or it's overly reactive, and once it's happening every day, it's hard to sort of shut it off.
Now, Paula, I want you to lie down on this couch because I'm introducing Sigmund Freud to our discussion.
Yeah.
And there's a Freudian concept that you write about. Do people with chronic pain actually get some kind of, quote, secondary gain from having it?
Yeah, that's actually added to the stigma with with the Freudian belief, yeah, that there's a reason, especially when it's very chronic, like what I have, that the more chronic it is, the more quote unquote secondary gain the person's getting. But I don't know what kind of wonderful rewards I'm getting from having it was pain for 23 years. You know there's a belief that the person wants to be coddled and nursed all the time, but the reality is that if you have a chronic headache, there's no one around like fluffing your pillow and treating you specially. You know, it doesn't have that effect of making you into a special person with special privileges. So it's not glamorous life.
Paula, I want to jump in there and I want to shake Freud's shoulders till he rattles. If he thinks there's any secondary gain in getting chronic pain, don't get me even started. I just don't know where to go. I just get angry and it's not helpful.
This program regularly attacks Jung, but I won't hear a word against Sigmund.
There's a lot of good stuff in Freud and Jung, I would agree, but this is not one of them.
Okay.
And that's Freud, done and dusted on chronic pain. But Paula, the people who say they aren't the right, they haven't got the right triggers, or the people who say, you quote some people who did a study and found there was no consistent triggers. I want to shake those people too till their teeth rattle, because quite frankly, there are a squillion triggers, but you've got to ask the right questions. If you want the right answers, whether it's about climate change, I don't care. If you want to ask the right question, get the right answers, you've got to ask the right questions. And you let me alone with any chronic pain sufferer, and I'm sorry, Paula, but I'd like to get hold of you for a few minutes and question you, is there any perfume in your life, in your house, in your garbage bins? Because garbage bins these days are perfume, would you believe? And we know all the chemical triggers that can cause headaches. They're in perfume and
perfume garbage. What a wonderful world we live in.
I mean, if I got rid of every trigger, I'd be living like in a plastic bubble and I'd still have the headache. That's the reason why my book is a black comedy, because so many doctors everybody has the exact trigger that they believe all headaches are caused by. If I would just do that and then I try it out,
I would
get to be afraid of the outside world.
Before we all get a headache from arguing, now let's just quieten it down a little. But Carol, in science, of course, one looks for a retort, you know, for comparison. A lot of people never get headaches or say they never get headaches. What does that tell us? The absence of headaches.
That tells us about the old Fred syndrome when I talk about it. We all know old Fred. He lives at the end of the road. He's drunk three bottles of wine a day since he was 20, and he's smoked three packets of cigarettes a day since he was 10 years old, and he never gets sick, and he drops dead quietly in his sleep when he's 100 years old. And old Fred syndrome is a genetic thing, to be honest. And I believe headaches are genetic, and that's why I've put a lot of effort into this book. We know the genetics. We know the genetics for migraine, for stress, for tension. And that's why I would say to you, Philip, your headaches were probably a combination of stress and migraine. If we did your genotype, which is easily done these days, I did my genotype just for you, quote-unquote, laughs. It isn't funny, because when you look at your genotype, you just want to give up, but you keep going. And you can get it done for $99, and in their wisdom in America, they decided to jump on the people who did 23andMe. And we had a program on that, I think it was Norman Swan on this radio, about 23andMe. There is nothing wrong with 23andMe genetics. The problem with it is the interpretation, over-interpretation.
Paula, you've tried everything to try and get rid of your pain, from surgery to a battery of Botox injections, to a dousing of Lithuanian holy water, from a mountain of pharmaceutical products to aromatherapy, and even, and I like this one particularly, a vibrating hat. Did any of these approaches work at all?
Yeah, that through trial and error, it's true that I found some things that helped me live with it, but it's different for every person, so I can't recommend necessarily. But you know, to everybody. But for me, I found ironically that caffeine helps me a lot. That because of alternative medicine, I stayed away from it for many years. I'm afraid that that was a cause of it, but I still had the headaches anyway. So in recent years, I've gone back to maybe just a few cups a day, and that works better for me than any narcotic or nerve injection. So I highly recommend that. And then this is going to sound strange, but a combination of lavender and peppermint oil, and I put that like on the temples, and I have no idea why that works.
Carol, I'm feeling terribly guilty as a result of your contribution to the program, because my firstborn daughter, Dr. Rebecca Adams, is a psychiatrist, great believer in Sigmund Freud, suffers terribly from migraines. Is this my genetic curse passed on to her?
I suspect it's one of your, either you or her mum's genetic curse. Her mum may have it. And the genetic curse, not everybody with the gene necessarily gets the headache, but it's much more common. We've got studies done in Australia from the Genome-Wide Association. Professor Lynn Griffiths up there in Griffith University, she's done genetic studies on the genes that go to all the headaches, and your daughter may have just got an unlucky handful. But can I also, I read a transcript of one of Paula's interviews, and I cracked up. I really loved this. She said she's tried, Paula, you say you've tried everything other than colonic irrigation or Jews for Jesus.
And yes, that's right. I have my standards, yes.
I just think that's wonderful. But you sound, again, like my patients. But you've also told me something about your adenosine receptors, because if you're getting relief from caffeine, you ought to look up a study on migraine-prone rats. They get better if they've got a crappy adenosine receptors genetically, and they drink coffee, they get better too. I'm not saying you're in the class of rats. I'm just saying we know about adenosine receptors. We know so much science. In Australia, sadly, we've gone anti-science in recent times, which is really sad. We've got so much...
Following American example,
I'll give you that, Philip. But, you know, we're so anti-science. But the problem is we've got the science. We've got people writing PhDs on little slivers of all this puzzle that you rightly talk about. But if Jews for Jesus doesn't work or colonic irrigation doesn't work, it doesn't mean it doesn't work for someone out there.
I never tried colonic irrigation.
I don't recommend
it. Too late?
I've never had it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay. Now, Paula, one of your triggers... Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. One of your triggers seems to be crying. Weeping can lead to a headache. Yeah.
I have it every day, and those are the headaches that I should differentiate. That when you do have it every day and all the time, it is much harder to control with triggers. That when it's more chronic, it's basically like a cow path gets burned in the brain, and it's hard to reverse it. And they know, and the doctor was talking about how much they know about headache, but actually there's still so much that they do not know. And in the United States in the last 6 years, there's been an advocacy group of different headache groups called the Alliance for Headache Disorders Advocacy, and they've been lobbying to the U.S. government to get more funding for, you know, to understand these problems.
Now, I'm afraid we're out of time, but I've got to raise this issue, Carol. As you know, this is a nocturnal program, and many people listen to it in bed, and it's sort of foreplay for a bit of hanky-panky that occurs after we go off air, which raises the issue of, not tonight, darling, I have a headache. Would you like to comment on this phenomenon?
It is sometimes very true, and sometimes, it's sometimes true that people will use that as an excuse. It's sometimes true that the person has got a headache and the last thing they want is, you know, anything that you describe as hanky-panky. But sometimes you can actually get a headache from having sex. You can have the orgasm headache. There are many, many headaches.
The orgasm headache?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That would put you off your stroke, wouldn't it?
The orgasm headache?
It exists. But But
yeah, it's actually the medical classification.
The voice of Paula Kamen, author of All in My Head, An Epic Quest to Cure an Unrelenting, Totally Unreasonable, and Only Slightly Enlightening Headache. That is, in fact, the title. It's published by DeCapo Books. And Dr. Carole Hungerford is author of Headache, A Family Doctor's Guide to Treating a Common Ailment, published by Scribe. Coming up next, a story of love, romance, and deceit.